Thanks again for hanging out with us here today. I'm excited. We've got a couple weeks left in our testimony series that we've been doing. And if you're joining us for the first time today, it's called What He's Done. And we're just taking a look at what God has done in the lives of, here's the thing. We could probably parade each one of you up here and tell me a story about what God's done in your life. How awesome would that be just to hear what God has done? Don't ever lose sight of the I am, the Almighty I am, and what He says about you, what He calls you to, the purpose that He gives you. So today we've got one more for you, a young man by the name of Landon Heimberger, and I'm excited for him. You may remember him. He got baptized a few months ago, he's gonna trend a little more on the younger side of the spectrum here for us today. But I think that's really awesome because I want you to hear. He's a freshman in high school. What does a freshman in high school know about life? Listen to him. He gets it. Listen to his story. He gets it. He understands it. My prayer for him is that he would hold on to the truth that he's going to share with you today. He'd hold on to it so tightly the rest of his life. Not that God's ever going to let it go completely, but those of us that have walked the walk of life, here's one of the things I want you to capture from his story today. It does not matter how young or how old you are. When God puts a calling on your life, listen, pay attention to it. So help me welcome Landon.
Hello, my name is Landon Heimberger. I'm 15 years old. I'm entering my freshman year at Green High School, and I'm a part of the high school ministry at the chapel. I was recently baptized, like you mentioned here, last March, and I was asked to share my testimony again, and that was an honor. So growing up, I didn't go to church much or learn about God a lot, but I did fear the possibility of Him existing, but I never actually believed in Him. I put a lot of pressure on myself to be perfect. Perfect grades, perfect athlete, be liked by everyone. And whenever I fell short of these unrealistic standards that I set for myself, I hated myself. I really didn't care about religion at all. I mean, why should I have? In my eyes, my life was really just about enjoying myself and having a good time. So why would I limit myself by adding a bunch of extra rules? That being said, I needed Jesus much more than I realized. I was a very pessimistic person. I had trouble controlling my anger, and I was very self-absorbed and self-reliant. Without someone to lean on or rely on, I was alone and unhappy. I was constantly looking for something I could revolve my life around, something I could dedicate all my time and energy to. However, everything that I tried to idolize, everything that I tried to replace God with, sports, relationships, academics, they all left me just feeling empty inside. I figured if God truly existed, He would have punished me when I lied on His name, or at least I would feel His presence. I knew something was missing. I just didn't know what. But then Jesus called me to Him. A couple years ago, I was arguing with one of my close Christian friends on whether or not God was real. And I wasn't a stranger to these kinds of debates. I put a lot of time and thought into them. And deep down, I do think I wanted God to be real, but my heart was hardened from the truth, and I just thought it was too good to be true. I mean, how could everything I've ever done just be forgiven, no strings attached? Unfortunately, I started to sway my friend's mind, and I made him question his faith. But one night, not long after, I was laying in bed, bored, after a long day on vacation, and I opened up my phone just to find something to do, like a regular night. And I saw this video of a man preaching the good news of the gospel. You know, how Jesus loves for me, died for me, and wants a relationship with me. I've seen countless of these before, and I usually just brush them aside, ignoring any convictions that I felt out of stubbornness and skepticism. But something was different. He spoke with such genuineness and passion that it really did catch my attention. It felt like he wanted to help me, rather than just get his point across, like I often did. Or maybe it was just simply God working within me, but it made me pause. I sat there in silence, and I just thought. And then I started to cry. I felt all the resentment that I had towards God that I didn't even realize I had turn straight to tears. And after I calmed down, I got on my knees and I prayed for the first time, and I gave everything that I had been holding into him, and I felt joy. And something in me changed that night, and that was the beginning of my walk with Christ. And then about a year and a half after that, I was invited to come to the chapel for the first time. I was in seventh grade, so I attended the middle school services and occasionally the services in this room. And despite a welcoming staff and community, I felt like I didn't belong here. I didn't know half the Bible stories other kids my age did. I was quiet, so I didn't make friends easily, and I felt like no one even wanted me here. I constantly prayed to God for a sign on whether or not coming to church here was even worth going to. And God gave me one. I started noticing more opportunities to share and speak out in the middle school room and my small group. So I started taking them. I realized that the reason I felt isolated at church was because I was just isolating myself. And then God showed me the importance of not only having a good community, but of actively being a part of that community, and I am very grateful for that. That combined with the love and compassion I received from my small group, the staff, and small acts of kindness from people around the church helped me view this place as a second home, not just some place to drag myself every Sunday morning. I am now proud to say that I have been a Christian for about 3.5 years, and I do my best to honor God in all areas of my life. Before I knew the love of Jesus, and even early on in my faith, I used to think the most important thing in my life was just for me to be happy and materialistically successful. But now, I see that my purpose is far greater than that. I am called to dedicate my life to the advancement of his kingdom, the doing of his will, and the spreading of his word. And although these things honor God above myself, I find them much more fulfilling than worldly success. Now that I know Christ, I have a lot easier time controlling my anger, relying on others when necessary, and seeing the good in all situations. I honor God at school by uplifting my peers and applying myself academically, and I also started a Bible study group last year so me and my friends could have a place to talk to each other about the Bible and take the lessons and teachings from it in a place where we can feel comfortable sharing. And I really enjoy playing sports, so I honor God through sports by uplifting my teammates, playing with integrity, and working hard. And I honor God everywhere through prayer, compassion, caring for others, and relying on God and finding strength in him in the tough times and thanking him for the good times. I try my best to be public with my faith, even though it is frightening because I'm young, and I'm not the best speaker, and I'm not the best writer. So I do mess up a lot. But I love helping others experience the same level of joy, truth, and freedom that I personally have in God. Especially early on in my faith, I dreaded having to follow God's commandments and saw the whole Bible as just some big to-do list, you know, something I had to check off my list every day. But now I understand that being a Christian is so much more than you can't do this if you want salvation, or I can't do this if I want God to love me. He's the basis and means for how I live my life, why I live my life the way that I do, and just my life every single day. I am not my own. I never was. I just realize now who I belong to, and I'm glad to be alive in Christ. That's all. Thank you.
I love it. It's not easy to come up here and stand in front of people, and I don't think I ever could have done that at age 15. Well done, sir. Yeah. Open your Bible with me to 1 Samuel chapter 3. There's a couple little themes here that I heard in his testimony that I want us to just kind of grab hold of just a little bit. When God calls you, when he grabs hold of your life, what does that look like? What does it mean for us to hear his voice? What does that mean for us to listen to him? In a world that is so full of noise, what does it mean for us to listen to God? So 1 Samuel chapter 3, this is a fairly well-known passage if you've been in the Bible at all, you're going to recognize this one. And I don't have time to read the whole on the whole chapter to you. So let me just kind of give you some snippets here, and then we're going to key in on a handful of verses. Hannah, who is Samuel's mom, dedicates him to the Lord and says, "Hey, my son's gonna become a priest. He's gonna go into training." So he goes into training, and Eli is his priestly, we'll call him his mentor. He is teaching him. Eli's a decent priest. He's okay. He's not the best husband and not the best father, because his household is a bit of a mess. There's some stuff going on there that if you read through this book, you see his boys especially are not acting the way they should be acting. But nonetheless, here's Eli, and Eli is going to train up one of the key prophets of the Old Testament. And so here one night, Samuel's taking care of his duties. And so if you'll pick up with me here in verse 8, it's evening. Samuel's tending the lamp, and he's kind of reclining, and he's hanging out. And the Lord called to Samuel, and in the previous verses, he called to Samuel. Samuel goes, "Who is it?" So he goes running into Eli. Eli says, "Hey, it's not me. Go back and lay back down." So he goes back in. The Lord calls to him again. "Eli, what do you want?" "It's not me. Go lay back down." He calls to him, verse 8, "And the Lord called to Samuel again the third time. And he arose and went to Eli and said, 'Here I am, for you called me.' And then Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, 'Go lie down, and if he calls you, you shall say, Speak, Lord, for your servant hears.' So Samuel went and lay down in his place. And the Lord came and stood and calling out as other times, 'Samuel, Samuel.' And Samuel said, 'Speak, for your servant hears.'" And so this just famous passage in here of this back and forth calling to Samuel and him not understanding. There, I find a little bit of comfort in this because if you're anything like me, I don't know that I can tell you exactly what it means to hear God's voice. Right? I mean, it's never in my life, it's never been this audible, happy. It's interesting. That's my name. If I've never met you, that is my given name. It's on my birth certificate. And so I can tell you that I can be in a store and I'm checking out or doing whatever I do, and there's someone over here that says, this thing happened to me and it made me so happy. And I don't turn and look at them like they're calling my name, even though that is my name. Or if you've ever had any fun at a birthday party, "Happy birthday to me." You would think I'd be going crazy. Like, who in the world is... But I've learned, I can tell the difference between when you say happy and when you call my name. I can tell. There's a different tone. I can pay attention to that. Like I've learned over the years, and I think that's my brain trying to keep me sane, but I can tell. So what does it mean for God to call me? It's not audible. It's hard. And so here's Samuel who is confused by it. He thinks it's Eli, and he goes back again and again. And here's God who is, I love this, man. Here's God who is persistently calling him. And he understands that Samuel's confused, and he's running back to Eli. It's also, I'll say this again at the end, for all his flaws, it's not bad to have somebody like Eli in your life to point you to, hey, I think that's God calling you. You should listen to that. Eli does a great job of that there. So, in this world with distractions and noises and things and stuff for us to do, how do we hear God's voice? In a world where there are so many voices that speak into our lives, and I would say, make no mistake, there is someone who will whisper in your ear, and it's not God. The evil one will come to you, and he will try to convince you. He'll remind you of the guilt. He'll remind you of the shame in your life. And it doesn't matter that God has forgiven you. He'll remind you of your failures and your flaws. He'll remind you of those things. Or worse yet, he'll convince you that you're so great that you don't even need God. I mean, that's what he did to Adam and Eve. In Genesis chapter 3, he absolutely wrecked them, and it wrecked us because they were so convinced that they didn't need God. I think it's important for us to hear from God. So what does that look like? So three things for us here on this. And the first thing to consider is authority. So I tend to pay close attention when someone in authority over me speaks, right? A parent, a boss, these wonderful sheriff's guys out here, those wonderful speed bumps that appeared out of nowhere this week. I tend to pay attention. I've learned that I'm not going to be late for church because I can't come in at 45 miles an hour. It's not possible. Thank you for not coming in at 45 miles an hour. We've tried to do a good job of getting our community on our property. I feel like we've done that. Now we're trying to make sure we don't run them over. So just small things. You pay attention to authority in your life. But the problem that most of us have, I have the same problem, is that sometimes I don't want to recognize authority. Look back at chapter 3 here. Eli recognizes there, he recognizes that God is speaking. He recognizes the authority there. He instructs him to listen. But look a little bit further down, because the news that God is going to share is not really all that fantastic. And so he's about to break it that he's going to put some justice into Eli's family. In fact, basically, he's going to remove Eli's family line from the priestly duties, and he's going to give that to Samuel. And it's bad enough news that Samuel's going to lay there the rest of the night, and he can't sleep, because how is he going to tell his boss or his mentor this? And so Eli doesn't care. Look at verse 12. This is what God says. God says, "On that day, I will fulfill against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. And I declare to him that I am about to punish his house forever for the iniquity that he knew, because his sons were blaspheming God and he did not restrain them. Therefore, I swear to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned by sacrifice or offering." In fact, Eli, you're not getting out of it at this point. And that's what he tells this kid, Samuel. So Samuel lay there until morning. Then he opened the doors of the house of the Lord, and Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. But here's that authority again. Eli called Samuel and said, "Samuel, my son." And he said, here I am." And Eli said, what was it that he told you? "Don't hide it from me." In other words, listen, I respect the authority of God so much. Don't hide it from me. May God do so to you and more also if you hide anything from me of what he told you. So Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. It was an understanding and a respect of the authority of God. I could spend another whole hour, 2 hours, laying out the reasons for God's authority in this world. Landon spoke to it really well. He came to understand that even as a middle school young man, that God is exactly who he claims to be and is worthy to be listened to, worthy to be heard. Second thing is a relationship. Think about this for just a second. You can be a parent sitting over here, and if a child runs in over here and says, "Mom, Dad," you might turn and look, but you know if it's your kid or not. Why? Because you know your kid's voice. In the same way, if you say my name and you're talking to me, I can tell. So my kid could run in over here and, "Dad," and I know, "Ooh, that's my kid." Why? Because you know them. You've spent time with them. You have an idea of whether or not they're even in the building. No, they didn't come to church today, so they're not even here. You have a relationship with them. You can pick your kid or your grandkid out in a crowd just by the way they walk. They can be far enough away that you can see, "Oh, that's my kid. I can tell by the way they walk, by their hair, by their..." Why? Because I know them. I know all the little things about them. John chapter 10, Jesus would say the same thing. He says, "My sheep hear my voice and I know them and they follow me." We have a relationship with each other. And so I develop my relationship. You want to hear the voice of God? Develop your relationship by spending time with him in prayer, in silence and solitude. Like, turn stuff off and listen to God. In service to him, in worship, spending some time in the Bible. I think that's one of the greatest ways for you to discern and pick out the word of God. I mean, many of us have heard those, "Well, I feel like the Lord is telling me this." And you're like, "Ooh, that doesn't sound like God." I've had that happen many times to me. People, I feel like God is saying, no, he's not. Why? Because I've spent time in here in his word, and I know what he says. And he doesn't contradict himself. His character is not, it doesn't flip and flop. He doesn't love this one day and then hate it the next day. That's not God. Is what you're hearing different than what God is saying? If it is, then it's not from him. When you think of that line, I am who I am because the I am says that I am. I need to get to know his promises to me. I need to get to know what he says about me and what that looks like in my life. It would make great sense for me to spend some time doing that. Third is a sense of nearness to him. My child can come in here and say, Dad, and I'm going to pay attention. My child can be out in the parking lot by the speed bumps and say, Dad, and I'm not going to hear her. Why? Obviously, because I'm in here, she's out there. I'm not close enough to her. And the same thing is true with my relationship with God. The only real difference is this. When we start talking about nearness and distance from God, that's my problem, not his. He's always there. He will never leave you nor forsake you, never. It's me that tends to turn my back. It's me that tends to push away and land and talk about hardening my heart, and I don't want to hear that. Why? Because I start living for me. I'm selfish. I'm independent. I want my needs met in my own way. I don't want to hear your voice in my life because I'm doing it my way. And friend, if that's you, I get it. I've been there. I tend to be that way at times. And I also know this, that there is no greater place for peace and contentment in life than being close to God. I nothing else on this earth will ever fill that. No matter how far I run from him, I only need to turn back to him, and he's right there. That's his promise to me. And if that's you, if you struggle with that, you ought to memorize James 4. This is a great verse. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. And then do your part here. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Like, quit doing that. Stop it. Purify your heart. Like, stop living a double life. Don't be that way. You ought to memorize that verse. It's a great verse for us to live and walk. So God calls us, but to what end, right? So here's his voice. Is there a purpose in my life? And this is where I would say to you, I don't care if you're 15 or if you're 85. You have purpose and meaning and value on this earth. Three things here quickly about purpose. The first thing that we need to do is our purpose in life is to know him. And so I would say, friend, if you're here today and you don't know God, meaning just like Landon said, you've never bowed the knee to him and said, God, I recognize you. I recognize my sin and my failures and how I've messed up, and I need you. I need you to cleanse my heart, cleanse my hands. God, I need you. Get to know him like that. He sent his son to die for you, to offer forgiveness to you so that you don't have to live with the guilt and the shame. And friend, it's done at that point. It's a beautiful thing. He wants that relationship with us, not just for salvation at that point, but to get to know him, to continue to get to know him. The Apostle Paul, while he's in prison, writes these words. He makes this statement. He says, indeed, I count everything in life as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things, and it doesn't matter. I count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. Here's the rest, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and may share in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, that by any means possible, I may attain the resurrection from the dead. Those are major statements from Paul. He's saying that there's nothing greater than knowing God. There's nothing greater than it's even great to share in the sufferings of Jesus. That's awesome too. And so we don't tend to fall that way. We tend to chase our comfort and our good things and nice things in life. And Paul's saying that stuff doesn't matter. It pales in comparing to knowing God. What would it look like in my life if my chief aim is to truly know and identify with Jesus? I think it would radically change the way I treat my spouse, my friends, my coworkers, everyone, person at the mall. everyone. Next, we know him, we glorify him. The early church would say this. They would say that this is the primary function of mankind, that we are to glorify God. So what does that mean? How do we do that? Obedience to him, getting to know him and doing what he says, worshiping, serving, getting into those things. We like to say it here. We like to say we're living for Jesus in everything that we do. Landon ended with that, like everything that I do every day, I'm living for Jesus. Living for Jesus, teaching each other about him, and reaching the lost. That's how we glorify him. Paul, again, Paul, as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not at all be ashamed, but that with full courage now as always, Christ will be honored in my very body, whether by life or death, for me to live as Christ and to die as gain. So my very existence on this earth is to live for him. Think about this for just a second. I get amazed every time this gets brought up. The moon does not shine. It has no light source of its own. There's not a bulb in there that gets turned on at night and you get to see part of it. The moon is simply a reflection of the sun. And so you get some of it or all of it, depending on where it's at in relation to the rays that are coming around the earth and that whole thing. And so we get to see that. It's especially impressive when there's a full moon, right? So you get that full moon when it feels like it's really close to the earth, and you can walk outside and almost it almost feels like it's I can do a little gardening out here this evening at 3 o'clock in the morning if I wanted to. It's a full moon. It's bright enough. It is absolutely reflecting the sun in its full potential right there. I think that's us. I don't produce the glory of God. I reflect the glory of God. And there's times in my life that the glory of God feels like it's full and everyone gets to see it. And I'm on it and I'm doing it. And there's times that it's a little more like that sliver of the new moon. It's just there a little bit because I'm not living exactly the way I should be. It's a challenge and a push for me as I think about what it means for me to reflect God in all that I do. I've heard this said several times, and I don't know who said it originally, but this is a sobering thing for you to ponder. Consider that you may be the only Bible that some people will ever see or hear. The way you live, the way you choose to act to that waitress today when you go to lunch, the way you choose to speak to your kids or speak to your parents or all of those things, the way you choose to act in front of your teacher, that may be the only Bible that they ever get. That's sobering if we think about it. There's a call for me to glorify God in my very, very essence. And then finally, my last point is this: make him known. That's easier for me to do when I'm reflecting him well and I'm knowing him well, right? So if I get to know him and I know his character, And I know God and what he's about. I know things about him that God is not willing that anyone should perish. He wants everyone to come to salvation. He loves them. He's near to the brokenhearted. He longs to gather his people up like a mother hen to protect them and care for them. And when I start to realize those things about him, I start to treat the world that way too. And so part of our calling in life is to go make him known. You make him known by the actions that you live each and every day. You make him known by the words that you say and how you say them. You make him known by taking the things that you've learned about him and sharing those things with other people. You make a difference when you make him known by sharing light in a dark world. I don't know if you've recognized it lately, but it's a dark world we live in out there. Nothing seems to be going right. Nothing. My groceries cost more. People are honking at me in the roundabouts. Those things were supposed to make my life better, man. Come on. What in the world? Nothing's going right. How does peace and contentment land in my life? And how do I share that with other people? What does that look like? So I want to offer us two things, one now and one here in just a minute. But for right now, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to close in prayer. And I'd like to us to... So we did something similar last week where we prayed for each other. We're not going to do that today. But man, I think it's so good when we just pause and pray. And so I think maybe here for just a minute, we're going to have some silence. And I love silence because it feels awkward. Because we don't do it enough. That's why it's awkward. We don't sit and just listen to God or speak back to Him quietly. But I want to do that here for just a minute. And I want to challenge you with just a couple things. Maybe today for the first time, you say, God, I recognize you've been calling me and I've not been answering. And you answer Him back. You say, God, I'm listening. Speak to me. And let Him speak to you. Maybe today you give your life to Him for the first time. Maybe here in the next few minutes, maybe you've been running in the wrong direction. And it's time to turn around and listen to Him.